I'm Afshin Ratansi, and welcome to Going Underground, broadcasting all around the world from the heart of the Middle East, where the disgraced dictator of Ukraine, Zelensky, is due today to meet Crown Prince Mohammed bin Salman in Saudi Arabia. A previous scheduled meeting had to be cancelled as Donald Trump made it clear that he was ending support for the proxy war on Russia, sparked by the US-backed coup in 2014. So how much pity and hatred does the Trump administration have for Zelensky and his lackeys in London, Paris and Brussels? Perhaps we'll see if Britain's Starmer and Francis Macron come to the White House this week. And can we expect the USA to exit NATO, focusing on new 21st century priorities? Joining me from Edenton in North Carolina is Lieutenant Colonel Anthony Schaffer, a veteran senior intelligence officer in the US Army and Defense Intelligence Agency and former advisor on President Trump's 2020 campaign. Lieutenant Colonel Schaffer, thanks so much for coming back on the show. I understand that in previous days, it might have been difficult for you to return to Going Underground. Is this because of that, the bad old days of no freedom of speech when Antony Blinken, then Secretary of State, called out RT, one of the platforms this show goes out on?
Yeah, let me be clear. Look, I used to be a regular on RT, and I always felt, my job was to go out and be on media and talk about things, especially as a think tank guy. If you can't communicate policy, you're not really doing policy. But that wasn't the case during the Biden years. The Biden folks weren't doing policy. They were doing propaganda. And I'll just be that blunt about it. So those of us who actually had to live within the communication sphere in the United States were literally essentially told the moment you do something that's even marginally linked to Russia, you're going to be essentially suspended or canceled in any way they can get to you. Now, I like being independent. I like being out there and doing things. But the problem is this: once you have the mechanisms of government, which the Biden folks did, available to them, they can do things to cancel you and get you off the radar. I was canceled for the time before Elon Musk came back on X. So those are the sorts of things they would do to you to punish you. So I appreciate the fact that we now have a return to free speech, which I think is important, and everybody's going to.
Yeah, and I mean, there were problems as well as regards the Constitution, because if the social media companies are themselves defense contractors, they're kind of agencies of government, in which case they are violating the First Amendment
exactly.
of your Constitution.
I agree with that assessment. Absolutely. Yep.
Look, before we even get to whether the USA should leave NATO, Zelensky meeting MBS in Riyadh. How numbered, yeah. I mean, at the time I'm doing this interview, he's still alive. How numbered are his days? I mean, you don't foresee him going back to Saudi Arabia and meeting MBS anytime soon?
Well, let me be blunt. You guys have been following me for a while. Look, you got a guy that wears high heels and is paid to read scripts as the guy in charge of Ukraine right now, and that's not a good look. I believe that whatever happens, it's not going to be Zelensky. Zelensky is a pass-through. I think he's speaking for the powers of the EU. Where did he run? After the failed meeting with Trump, where did he run? He ran into the arms, literally, of Keir Starmer and 10 Downing Street. And then they had a war cabinet meeting. I don't know what you want to call it. All the folks from the EU got together and had this big old security meeting. To basically say, oh, we don't agree with President Trump. So that's why Zelensky went there. I think he's an extension of the EU. At least that's what he wants. And at this point, I don't think, I'm not speaking for the White House. I've not spoken to the White House about this. Whatever I say is Tony Schaefer's opinion. I don't think anybody in President Trump's cabinet is going to be willing to deal with Zelensky. Because even now, with Zelensky's post on X saying, oh, I'm ready to negotiate, I didn't hear an apology in there anywhere, just saying. So,
yeah, he might have apologized and then taken back the apology by the time this goes out, obviously. But at the same time, and you say a spokesperson for the EU, but also the UK, because it was Starmer, the British Prime Minister, my Prime Minister, I understand that the British are being told not to share intelligence. And I know that's your expertise in the U.S. Army.
Right.
Not to share intelligence with Ukraine. For a start, why should Britain be trusted? And secondly, if you're looking at it from the British perspective, if I put my British Union Jack hat on, you know, you've got your troops storming around my country. You've got your listening posts, weapons, the United States Air Force there. Who gives the right for the Americans to order us about how we share intelligence, given there's no parliamentary vote being taken since the Trump administration has ordered Starmer to do this?
Yeah, I appreciate the way you phrased all that. So let's start off by reminding people, and I love the UK. I've spent a lot of time there. I have a relationship with Warwick University in Coventry. And I've been in combat with the British military. But let's be honest. The British military today is essentially not much more than a Monty Python skit in the making. Come on. You guys have cut the military budget. You've given all your tanks to Ukraine. And now we're talking about intelligence. James Bond ain't around anymore. I think at this point, the United States is relooking all the issues relating to intelligence sharing, as the British are to us. But I think there's a certain level of distrust because of something called the Russia collusion narrative. We've spoken about it a little bit before, but what we've come to find now in greater detail, and I think we're going to get more media on this, is MI6 was nose deep in helping set that up with the Democrats. So I think, and Keir Starmer, speaking of politics, sent folks over to support Kamala Harris. Not a good move. So I'm just saying, despite our two nations being enduring partners, there's been some bad things happen between our partnership. And I think the United States under Trump, and to include the feet people, my little tribe, my tribe of intelligence officers who support President Trump, we're all in agreement that we need to relook how we interact with the UK at the military and intelligence level based on what we've observed over the past 8 years.
It's still not been cleared up why Sir Keir Starmer, before he went into politics, was meeting with MI6. He, of course, persecuted Julian Assange before he came into power. And given the MI6 role in trying to destroy the reputation of Donald Trump, I mean, I know you'd say that Donald Trump is an amazing diplomat. I mean, he clearly knows Starmer's perhaps direct role in this. And certainly Lieutenant Colonel Tulsi Gabbard, the Director of National Intelligence, would know how Starmer may perhaps himself be involved in trying to subvert U.S. democracy.
No doubt. I think these people are all aware in greater detail than I know, by the way. I know quite a bit, but they know more. And yeah, I was dealing with the British embassy during the 2017 to 2018 period, and it was very clear that there were issues regarding the British not quite being on board with President Trump. That is to say that even after Trump came into office, they were clearly supporting the effort to basically support the Russia collusion narrative. Now, President Trump has said, and I agree, that he said this during the Zelensky meeting Friday before last, that that Putin and the Russians took it on the chin as well as he did over the Russia collusion thing. Well, there's one organization and one nation kind of at the center of both issues, MI6 in the UK. MI6 in the UK took a very active role and helping support the Maidan revolution against the pro-Russian government in Ukraine. And they continue, the MI6 has continued to be essentially supporting elements opposed to Donald Trump. So it is what it is. I'm not saying anything that people can't verify here. I know people are going to get upset about it, but it's something that we have to...
Well, people are going to ask why Trump is so calm.
We'll never resolve it.
How is it Trump is so calm in the Oval Office with Sir Keir Starmer, perhaps again later this week? How does he maintain being so calm with him, knowing what he clearly does about Keir Starmer and the so-called deep state in Britain and what it tried to do?
Yeah, you know, that's a great question. I think... The one thing that's good about the four-year absence, that is to say when he did not win, I think he won the 2020 election. I've said this over and over, but since he did not get inaugurated in January of 2021, he had 4 years to kind of think about what went wrong. And over that 4 years, the Democrats call it grievance. I call it accountability. he figured out how to bring accountability to the table. So remember, we're only 6 weeks into a four-year term. And I think he can afford to be generous in the presence of those who are his enemies and not worry about it. And I think there's more coming. I think there's some tricks. This is a poker game. And as President Trump said with Zelensky, Zelensky has no cards. I don't know if Keir Starmer has many more cards either, but we'll see how the game goes. But it's a poker game, and we're in about the second hand of a full game right now. So
there are clearly British soldiers in the field in Ukraine right now,
right,
and MI6 in Ukraine helping, some would say, the Nazis of Eastern Ukraine, and helping Zelensky, dictator Zelensky, as Trump calls
right.
it. What advice?
I've said as much on one of the shows I host. Yes. So.
What advice would you give to those British soldiers in Ukraine right now, and the intelligence officials there, presumably, I don't know, you'll have to tell me whether you think, who are trying to sabotage Trump's desire for peace?
I think they were the MI6 folks and the British troops there, I think may be there on the belief they're on the right side of history, and they're not. I fought the Cold War. We beat the Soviets. The Cold War is done. It's time we recognize that there's more to be had by finding a framework for all of Eastern Europe and the Russians to work with Western Europe and the British. And by the way, one of the notable features of all this is that the EU and probably Britain has never stopped buying Russian petroleum, Russian gas, Russian oil. It just goes through pass-throughs and gets more expensive. So nobody in Europe is actually taking serious the idea of beating Putin if you're paying him for his gas. So I think the people on the ground there need to look at why they're there and what exactly they're supposed to accomplish. Is there a work there for the greatest good? Is this going to help save lives and bring peace? That would be the first question I would ask myself if I were a British soldier or MI6 operative. Secondly, what is the long-term strategy? Is this like President Trump said to Senator Warren, Pocahontas, last night? Do you all want to keep this going 5 more years? Is that in our interest? Or is it time to stop the killing? And I'm of the school, with President Trump, it's time we relook at look at what's going on. And come on, this is 2025, and yet both sides are engaged in trench warfare, 1917-style trench warfare. I don't think it's a good idea, and I don't think it's going to benefit the EU or the UK long term. So maybe the intelligence services and British military needs to think about what that means for their future as well.
Lieutenant Colonel Tony Shaffer, I'll stop you there. More from the veteran US intelligence official after this break. Welcome back to Going Underground. I'm still here with the veteran senior intelligence officer in the U.S. Army and Defense Intelligence Agency, Lieutenant Colonel Anthony Shaffer. Lieutenant Colonel, you were talking about the eternal war that it looks as if the European Union and Britain want. Are these elites, well, they're clearly out of touch with their own populations given the polling, but are they idiots or are they people who genuinely believe that Russia wants to march down the Champs-Élysées and invade London?
Well, I think if you just look at it rationally, look at what the Russians are doing right now just to maintain a trench warfare. Think about this, like they're putting everything they have into maintaining that war. So are we to believe that they're going to be able to reestablish the 12 tank armies that they stormed Berlin with in World War II? Really? Are we going to go from this kind of morass, this trench warfare, to 1986 to fold the gap? Is that what we're really thinking about here? Because it's not rational. And oh, by the way, I was trained as a lieutenant to understand something called intelligence preparation of the battle space. We understood how to map out and determine Soviet troop strength by sporadic and often incomplete reports. I can tell you, based on how we developed this methodology, we could figure out pretty quick if the Russians were up to something. They're not up to something, just saying. But I think it's more about profit. Two things happened this past week. First off, Ursula von der Leyen, is that her name? I always get it wrong. The king of, I mean, I'm sorry, the president
no
of
one in,
the EU.
No one in the European Union voted for her, I'll tell you that.
I know, isn't it great? Anyway, so she was asked on, I think, German TV, would you send your kids to war? She said, oh, of course not. That's below me. So if it's not like an existential effort to beat Russia, it's something else. Well, that something else is probably because in the same week she said, oh, we want to up arm Europe. We want to create $850 billion of new defense spending. Does that sound like someone who's seeking peace? You want to arm up? This sounds like Cold War language to me. What do I know, though, right?
Well, if it is the share prices of those British arms contractors have all been going up, obviously, since the Oval Office bust up. But of course, yep. There are U.S. military contractors. I know Trump is saying that there will be increases as well in U.S. spending.
There will.
But then I don't know who it is in your deep state that favors this eternal war and opposes. I mean, you saw the Democrats at the congressional speech Trump gave. They did not want peace. They didn't even stand up when Trump said he wanted peace. You expect the deep state just to go quietly as Trump organizes peace in Europe?
No. No, I think that's why he's picked certain people to certain jobs. And, you know, you mentioned Tulsi Gabbard. Tulsi's there for a reason. I know Tulsi. I consider her a friend. Pete Hegseth being at the Pentagon. He has no allegiance to any defense contractor, which is a big issue. Full disclosure, Pete and I are friends as well. I think President Trump is trying to pick people who will not be swayed by the traditional relationships. A number of Pentagon civilian leaders came out of military industry. General Mattis came out of being a contractor, a senior defense official, a contracting official. Mark Esper, a big Boeing guy. So those guys, no matter what they tell you, their job is to grow their company 7% per year. Tony Zinni told me the secret. General Zinni, former commander of Central Command, who was a BAE CEO at one point, he said the biggest job as the CEO of BAE was to grow the bottom line 7% per year. So if that's your job, war has to exist, right? I think I can make that link. So if you're a defense contractor and you have to grow 7% per year, war is a good thing. So this tells me, and where I think we're going, is that we want to engage in examining the next war. We're to tradition, and I've been at the Army War College, our Army War College. I've done lectures. Too often, we're trying to fight the last war. The last war did not go well for us, just saying. So I think we have to look at the 21st century for what it is, not what we want it to be. And people like Pete Hegseth, people like Tulsi Gabbard are going to examine threats as they're developing. So the money's not going to go to the old crowd.
There's $150 billion.
It's going to go to the new folks.
New $150 billion went through the Senate. I don't know whether that's enough to satisfy those forces in your country. But then...
Probably not.
But then, that's a lot of pressure on Lieutenant Colonel Gabbard and Pete Hegseth. I don't know how many people work at the Pentagon or the three-letter agencies over there. We know sabotage can be from within. So how are they going to stop that?
So let me get to that. Let me address it real quick. So there are going to be a lot of changes. While the changes at FBI and other bureaucracies have been public, the intelligence community is not going to be quite so public. But I haven't talked to him about this. Don't take this as Tony Schaefer saying this is what they've told him. I'm saying, based on my experience, based on what I know has to be done, there's going to be a similar internal clearinghouse of the intelligence community. It just won't be as public as those we're seeing right now being presented to the public regarding the other bureaucracies.
And you trust Ratcliffe at the CIA and Waltz, of all people, as national security advisor? Because Waltz
I don't know Ratcliffe, so I can't speak to that. I have to believe President Trump trusts him, so I'm going to go with that. And Mike, again, Mike Waltz and I are friends. I like Mike. I think Mike has come a long way regarding his point of view. I've known Mike for a long time. We used to be in the green room in the old days at Fox News together. So I do believe that it's Mike's job to be the traffic cop. He's there at the brainstem that goes to the president. So he's got to be there seeing and touching everything. So he sets the general theme. It's people like Tulsi and Pete who have to get down and get their deputies. They can't even do it. They're going to be busy. You've got to get people out there who understand how to do surgical removal. Let me say something. I said this in U.S. media the other day. The chairman of the Joint Chiefs, General Joseph Dunford, told me during one of our meetings back in 2017 or 18 that we, the United States, had spent 6,000%, had increased spending on drone technology by 6,000%. That's a lot of money. And yet the return on that investment was a 3% gain in real intelligence. Does that sound like a good investment? A 6,000% increase in spending for a 3% gain in intelligence? No. So that's how insane the intelligence community has been. I'm just using it as an example. So that's just the tip of the iceberg. I think there's going to be a lot of changes coming.
We had Chuck Spinney on a while back about Pentagon contractors, the famous Pentagon whistleblower. Even that drone figure, actually, it's not as big as the F-35 in terms of disparities.
I agree.
Arguably. But when you say you're a friend of the National Security Advisor, probably something that could persuade him to completely turn around from his pre-Russophobia, fighting the Cold War stuff, would arguably be the audit of all the billions of public U.S. money that were poured into Ukraine. What sort of thing do you think we're going to find? And who is it going to scoop up in your elite class? Perhaps politicians, perhaps businessmen, who knows?
So I think there's several planned investigations. They're not going yet, but they're coming. Again, take this as Tony Schaefer's opinion. I'm not telling you anything from direct contact. I'm saying this is me reading the tea leaves. There's going to be several investigations which examine two specific funding sources. One is USAID. I would argue USAID played a much more significant role in the Maidan Revolution and helping CIA do what it's done within Ukraine. I think we're going to come to find that. That's going to be bad. If you think the transgender gerbil issues that they brought up last night are bad, this ain't nothing compared to what we're going to come to find. And a lot of that money was being sent to Ukraine and back to think tanks in the United States, enriching deep state politicians of both parties.
I don't know what the time scale of all the release of this information, which of course has been investigated by so many of the few good journalists around the world who've been talking about this kind of thing. Because, I mean, by the time this goes out, perhaps your Attorney General Pam Bondi and the head of the FBI, Kash Patel, will have come out with it. But you know what I'm about to refer to. I mean, not even the JFK, MLK, RFK papers. What's going on with Jeffrey Epstein? We interviewed that Mossad agent that interviewed.
Well, let me finish the question. So the other funding stream is going to be DOD, because I've talked to folks on the ground who've told me that the money we send forward and the weapons don't make it to the front lines. Just saying. So those are going to be two areas of big fraud. Now back to Epstein. Look, there's strong rumor that Epstein was an intelligence asset. Just saying. So
we actually interviewed that guy. We've interviewed someone who said that they introduced Ghislaine Maxwell to Jeffrey Epstein, and that he was a Mossad asset for Israel.
So I, again, Tony Schaefer's opinion, not based on any direct conversations. The way I look at this, based on the reporting you guys have done and others, I think Epstein was a dirtbag, but he was a dirtbag that was willing to do anything any intelligence service asked him to do. That includes MI6, that includes the Israelis, it includes CIA. I can honestly say we, Army, military, we in DOD had nothing to do with him. Not to say we haven't done stupid stuff, we had nothing to do with that mess, just saying. But it's a mess, and I think that's why it's been so hard to get the FBI to cough this stuff up, because they keep using national security as a justification.
Yeah, what is this national security? I mean, is this Miriam Adelson's money, the casino mogul's money, paying for
Trump
that is stopping the information coming out?
Not about
money. Does Pam Bondi say things like, oh, we're looking into it, it's in some Manhattan court, the papers? I thought they'd be ready to go. They said they were going to release the stuff.
So did I. Yeah, well, there's two reasons. First, if I think there's a deeper glacier we have to examine, which is, as I mentioned, CIA. So if it's true, Pam Bondi's going to get this big old set of documents, probably, I don't know, probably something like 80 linear feet of documents relating to the operations that James Comey was engaged in. Remember that name? Nobody has put this together, but I think it's related. Again, my opinion, not something I know. The moment Kash Patel came into office, they started an investigation on James Comey off the books operations. I think that off the books operation goes back to Epstein. So if you're Pam Bondi and you start finding out that the FBI has been using a guy that everybody I know considers a criminal, you got to make some decisions. Oh, by the way, who else in the FBI or U.S. government were actually part of the scheme and maybe even visited the island? That's the issue. And that's what I think they're deliberating right now.
Well, you'd hope it's digital and they could put it in Elon Musk's Grok AI or something. But anyway, you'll have to come on next time and tell us whether the U.S. is leaving NATO. Lieutenant Colonel Tony Schaffer, thank you.
Thank you.
That's it for the show. We'll be back with a brand new episode on Saturday. Until then, keep in touch via all our social media. If it's not censored in your country, head to our channel, Going Underground TV, on rumble.com to watch new and old episodes of Going Underground. See you Saturday.